Grandmaster Melly Mel. Grandmaster Melly Mel is regarded as the greatest of all times in many circles. Generally, those circles consist of older heads like myself, 40 plus, who remember some of the earliest rap records, and cats who are slightly older than that, and usually from the New York area, who enjoy rap music directly from the clubs where it was being performed at. Places like the Ecstasy Garage Disco, the Disco Fever, the Ho Avenue Boys Club, Harlem World, Bonds International, Burger King Disco, etc., etc. A large contingency of people would agree that Melly Mel is one of the best because he's one of the first, so they automatically give that to him. Or they know that The Message was a monumental song, so they'll give that to him. Rolling Stone magazine says that The Message was the most influential rap record ever in one of their magazines. Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, of which Melly Mel is a member, was the first group to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Grandmaster Melly Mel was the first rapper to hold a gun on the cover of a rap record. I'm not glamorizing that, just a fun fact. Melly Mel was the first MC to do a collaboration with the R&B artist with Chaka Khan on I Feel For You. Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five were the first rap artists inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame. Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five is the first rap group to have their music archived in the Library of Congress, alongside recordings of Edison and other things of historical importance. Those facts are known to some people and not known to others. But for those who do know those facts, they would be more likely to give Grandmaster Melly Mel those accolades because he did become the frontman of the group at one point. Now, while all of those are impressive, if not astonishing accolades, they do not a great MC make. The criteria with which I declare Melly Mel to be the greatest of all time is first wordplay, clever wordplay, which we'll definitely get into. Originality, the things that he was the first to do, not the things that he was inspired to do by somebody who came before him, the things that did not exist until he brought them forth. And lastly, his impact on the genre. And I'm going to put in an extra one for honorable mention and say that prophesizing, because he prophesized in more than one rhyme. And when I talked to him, he said he wasn't trying to do it. He was just trying to be the best MC at the time. But at least two or three times he prophesized some urban things and he was right on time with it and so far ahead of his time. So I'll put that in as a little bonus. So just a bit of history before we get into it really quick. Before there was a Furious Five, before Grandmaster Flash had any MCs, Melly Mel and his brother Kid Creole wrote poetry together. And that's a common strand that I see in many of the great MCs that I've interviewed. Most of them started out writing poetry. Many great MCs that I've interviewed and ones that I've heard in interviews with others have cited that as before there was even the words hip hop uttered anywhere, they had a propensity to write poetry. And according to Mel, he got that from his sister Linda, who was a poet. Now, for a bit of context, we have to realize the consensus that I've gotten from talking to many who were MCs, who were not MCs, who were B-boys, who were just in the Bronx at this time before there were really any MCs and definitely anybody calling themselves an MC. There was just basically DJs. Mel told me that the first DJs were basically MCs. They talked and they entertained the crowd. The rhymes they said were rudimentary rhymes and they weren't full rhymes about themselves. They were one line here and there. And they were basically an extension of nursery rhymes. They were just talking as a segue between records or just to entertain the crowd. The microphone was there to announce, hey, Billy, you know, you left your car double parked. Hey, Janet, your mother's calling you. This is an early hip hop party before you had anybody declare themselves an MC. You had Kool Herc say things like party with the partiers, jam with the jammers. Just little phrases that didn't even necessarily rhyme. Coco LaRock, who was Herc's MC and one of the first MCs, would say lines like, there's not a man that can't be thrown, a horse that can't be rode, a bull that can't be stopped, and there's not a disco that I, Coco LaRock, can't rock. So that was generally the kind of rhymes that were being said mostly by DJs at that time, or the assistants to DJs who would hand the DJ records or back up the DJ or, again, just speak. To keep the crowd motivated, to keep things moving at the party. Now, according to many sources, and of course, according to Mel himself, he was the first one to say a full rhyme about himself on beat. Now, when I say on beat, again, the DJs were talking over the records and their cadence was not in lock to the beat. They were just talking. But the first person to actually rhyme on beat, saying a full rhyme, bragging about themselves, is unanimously said to be Grandmaster Melly Mel. Now, again, in the early days, before they met Flash, before they got up with Cowboy, before any of this had happened, and several years before rap was even on record, Melly Mel and Creole would write rhymes together, and they would split up lines back and forth. Basically, what you saw Run DMC do later. Kid Creole and Melly Mel were doing this before rap was even on a record, and before anybody had even uttered the words hip-hop. Now, in the interest of time, allow me to move forward to 1979. Rapper's Delight drops sometime near the end of the year, October, sometime in that time frame. King Tim III by the funk group Fatback Band drops somewhere right around that time. Some people say a few weeks before. We may never know. Somewhere within that timeline. Now, those who have done the research have found that there were literally dozens of rap records released right within that time frame of Rapper's Delight being released. Most of these didn't have national distribution and that strong radio presence of Rapper's Delight. In fact, almost none of them did, but they were there. Many of the rap groups of the time had been approached for years by different promoters and different record people to come and make a record. These are independent record people that saw their rap had some potential beyond just street music. But all of the groups turned down these recording opportunities because the vision wasn't there. And that may be hard to fathom now because we're almost 40 years into recorded rap music. But not many people, except for the forward-thinking promoters and record people, thought that someone would want to hear someone talking over somebody else's music. That vision just wasn't there. But a record executive by the name of Terry Lewis, not of Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis fame, with Brasilia Records or Brass Records, offered the Furious Five a recording opportunity without Grandmaster Flash at this time. They recorded a song called We Rap More Mellow in 1979. This was before Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five signed with Sugar Hill Records. This was before a lot of things happened. But the brilliance of the group is seen right off the bat. The fact that they could pass the microphone from one person to another and make five MCs literally sound like one. But the genius and prophesizing of Melly Mel was already evident on this recording, which was released under the name The Younger Generation. In the pocket chair, get ready to clap because Melly Mel started to rap. And ever since I locked out my very first party, I felt I could make myself somebody. It was something in my heart from the very start. I could see myself at the top of the chart, rapping on the mic, making cold, cold cats with a jock spinning from it called DJ Flash. Signing autographs for the young and old, wearing big time silver and solid gold. My name on the radio and in the magazine, my picture on a TV screen. It ain't like that yet, but you can see I got potential when you will agree. I'm coming up and I gotta step above the rest, cause I'm using that ladder they call success. You say one, two, one more and three. Raheem rocks so viciously. Now listen, I understand that the first rap recordings are an acquired taste. You had to be there to witness those records. If you weren't there at the time that they were released and to live in that time and in that context, then outside of a handful of just universally accepted and dope records that stand the test of time, most rap recordings, you're not going to get them. If you came in to hip hop or to rap recordings at the time of Run DMC or even after that, you know, during the so-called golden era or after that, these records may sound very primitive and very rudimentary to you and very elementary. But for a bit of context, this was advanced lyricism for the time. And mind you, they didn't have a blueprint as far as recordings to go off of. The Sugar Hill Gang hadn't blown up yet. You have to realize, this was 79, the end of 79, the last quarter of 79. So it's very possible that they hadn't even heard the Sugar Hill Gang record yet when this record was released. So there was nothing, no predecessor to base your record off of. So if you listen to what Mel said on that verse, his name would be on the radio, in the magazines, his picture on the TV screen. He'd be wearing big time silver and solid gold. Now, he didn't necessarily know that. He probably didn't know it. Every MC back then bragged about, you know, I got a color TV. I got, you know, more cash than a sucker could ever spend. That's just the braggadocio of rap at the time. But for Mel, it would happen. He's a prototype of the successful MC of the early 80s, late 70s, as far as rap recordings go. Now, the genius is starting to grow at this point, or the evidence of the genius is starting to grow. Because in 1979, they recorded another record called Super Rapping as Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. Lyrically, Super Rapping was almost identical to We Rap More Mellow. We Rap More Mellow was a step above a bootleg record. It didn't go anywhere as far as success and record sales and what have you. But Super Rappin', released on Bobby Robinson's and Joy Records, was about 4 minutes longer than We Rap More Mellow. And in 1979, Mel said a rhyme that if he never said another rhyme, I would still put him as the contender for one of the greatest. Okay, so even the most casual lovers of rap or listeners to music will recognize that as the last verse of The Message, which was released in 1982 on Sugar Hill Records. But this was 1979 on Super Rappin'. To make the story as short as possible, Ed Fletcher, aka Duke Booty, wrote 95% of The Message. Only Melly Mel and Duke Booty's voices are on the song, except for the arrest skit at the end. But the verses and the hooks are just Melly Mel and Duke Booty. Duke Booty wrote the hook and everything else up until the last verse. At the end of the song, Raheem of the Furious Five said that he suggested that Mel take his verse that he said in Super Rappin', which had been recorded 3 years previous, and put it on the end because it fit the subject matter perfectly. Now, this is the genius of it. When The Message came out, Melly Mel was 19 years old. When Super Rappin' came out, he would have had to have been 16 years old. So it's very possible that Melly Mel wrote that rhyme at 15 or before. Now, again, I'm biased because I'm probably the biggest proponent of Melly Mel. I'm a fan of Melly Mel. I'm a product of Melly Mel lyrically. I've recorded with him and I consider him a friend. But taking all of that off the table, these facts are historical facts. And if you look at a 15-year-old today and what they're able to rap about, let's just leave it at that. This was 1979 when the rhyme was said, and again, possibly written in 77, 78. That's a genius rhyme. We're going for prophecy here. We're going for cleverness here, and also impact from one verse. If you listen very closely to The Message verse or the Super Rapping verse, to really appreciate that today, you would have to be a youth back in the 70s to really appreciate that he was prophesizing. He was talking forward. He was saying, you'll grow in the ghetto living second rate and your eyes will sing a song of deep hate. The places you play and where you stay will look like one big alleyway. You'll admire all the number book takers, thugs, pimps, pushers, and big money makers driving big cars, spending 20s and 10s, and you'll want to grow up to be just like them. He was speaking something into existence, whether he was trying to or not, because the times weren't necessarily like that yet. But he was telling us something that was coming soon. I don't know. Maybe he prophesized crack, which came maybe 2 or 3 years later. I'm not sure. But he was speaking something into existence if you listen to that verse. I don't really have to play that same verse again or play The Message. We've already heard The Message. We all know The Message. But that's the verse. And that's the verse that really woke America up to the seriousness of rap music and the potential that rap music had to go beyond, you know, hip hop, shoebop to bop. Mel even said on a later song called Step Off, "Before my reign, it was the same old same with the bar, that street talk game." That's not typical MC braggadocio. That's not arrogance. That's the truth. Before Mel came in, we haven't even discussed the fact that he changed the cadence and the prototype for the modern day MC. Mel's responsible for it. See, you have to realize the people who influenced the ones that we call great, they're really greats. I mean, you know, when you listen to the Rakims, the Big Daddy Kanes, the KRS-Ones, and the Kool G Raps, they all cite Mel as an influence. Everybody cites Mel as an influence. Everybody of a certain age. Will Smith, if you read his autobiography, he cites Mel as an influence. You know, just tons of MCs cite Mel as an influence. So when you influence the ones who are consistently seen as the game changers, what does that make you? Now, by 1983, the group was about to split up. There was dissension in the group because Mel had had so much success with The Message and then The Message 2, which was called Survival. And then, you know, being the main person on some of the songs on the Message LP, you know, everybody else was feeling like they were kind of in the backseat. And Mel was still writing in conjunction with Duke Booty. 83 brought us New York, New York. And we all know the popular hook, New York, New York, big city of dreams. Everything in New York ain't always what it seems. You might get fooled if you come from out of town, but I'm down by law and I know my way around too much, too many people. But the lyric that I would like to focus on, two lyrics I would like to focus on this particular recording. I would like to look at the rhyme pattern and cadence of the first verse. A castle in the sky, 1 mile high, built to shelter the rich and greedy. Rows of eyes disguised as windows, looking down on the poor and the needy. Hundreds of people marching up the avenue, doing what they gotta do just to get by. I'm living in the land of plenty and many, but I'm damn sure poor and I don't know why. A lot of poetic techniques being utilized in that verse. These were young people making these records. And I don't think that they knew how genius they were at the time. But the metaphor of that, a castle in the sky, 1 mile high, built to shelter the rich and greedy. Rows of eyes disguised as windows, looking down on the poor and needy. He's talking about the skyscrapers in your major cities that look down on the downtrodden, the people that are doing their everyday business in the city. Incredible verse metaphorically, incredible rhyme. And again, the structure of it and the way that it's tailored is just, it's amazing for now, but it's definitely amazing for 1983. Another verse near the end of the song, Mel said, "The sky was crying, rain and hail, when you put your baby in the garbage pail. Then you kissed the kid and put down the lid and tried to forget what you just did. The muffled screams of a crying baby was enough to drive the young mother crazy. So she ran in the rain trying to ease the pain, and she drove herself insane." Another part of that, he said, "They never took the time to tell you about sex, so you had to learn about it in the discotheques. 9 months later, the baby is there, and the nigga that did it said, I don't care. You don't have enough money to help feed two, so you have to choose between the baby and you." Now, that was early using the N-word in a song, and I remember the radio had to beep that out, just like they had to beep out on The Message, people pissing on the staff, they just don't care. You know, so of course today that wouldn't get beeped out because we're in a different time. But that's something else that kind of stands out. The N-word was used back then, but not gratuitously like it is now. That was a lyric where, you know, it's not the same to say the brother that did it said, I don't care. It doesn't have the same impact. You know, you almost had to say the N-word then. And that was the thing that was so raw about rap that shook up America and really showed you the potential that this music had. Again, amazing verses. And I didn't speak about the criteria of painting vivid pictures with Mel, but you could even add that in as a fifth, which I'm only going with three, but another honorable mention. That verse he said about the sky crying, rain and hell, I was 13 years old. And when he said that verse, I could picture this alleyway with this young mother putting her baby in the trash. Again, excellent wordplay. And we I think Run DMC was just about to come out that year. Hadn't even gotten to Run DMC yet. We were still in the infantile stages of recorded rap, and this brother was dropping jewels of that magnitude. Okay, so in the next year, 1984, the Furious Five has already split up. You had half of the guys, Creole, Mel's brother, and Raheem go with Flash. They form a new group. Scorpio and Cowboy stay with Mel, and they get some more members, and they're Grandmaster Melly Mel in the Furious Five. This coincides with the Beat Street movie coming out, and Melly Mel does a title track for the soundtrack, Beat Street Breakdown. Mel was on literal fire on Beat Street Breakdown. So many parts that I could quote, but let me just get the best ones for right now. Now, for those who remember the movie, Ray Moe, the graffiti artist, has just died. And I'm sure Mel was given a script and told this is what happens in the movie, and he just wrote something to coincide. So starting off after the intro, he says, "A picture can express 1,000 words to describe all the beauty of life you give. And if the world was yours to do over, I know you'd paint a better place to live, where the colors would swirl and the boys and girls would grow in peace and harmony, and where murals stand on walls so grand as far as the eyes are able to see." I saw something recently, I think it was The Art of Rap, and Dougie Fresh was quoting that verse as just a great verse, and it is. He's rapping about a graffiti artist, and, you know, think about what he just said. Again, he's using multiple words within, so he's not rhyming the last word of each sentence. He's going in the middle. Murals stand on walls so grand as far as the eyes are able to see. I never knew art till I saw your face, and there'll never be another to take your place, because each and every time you touch a spray paint can, Michelangelo's soul controls your hand. Then serenades of blue and red, and the beauty of the rainbow fills your head. Crescendo colors playing tune. Why oh why'd you have to die so soon? Look, family, I can get a little long-winded when I talk about lyricism, and I didn't want to go this long, and I'm only on B Street. But it's imperative. It's imperative if I'm going to call somebody the greatest of all time with all the other potential goats we got out there. I got to give you a strong defense, a strong presentation on why I make the claim. Again, we're talking about 1984. I think Run DMC might have just made Hard Times and Jam Master J at that point. Hadn't made their whole LP yet. Context. We got to have context. Divine Sounds had just made What People Do for Money. The first generation of MCs on records were falling off. You know, the Treacherous Threes and those first, you know, it's no disrespect to the Treacherous Three. I'm just saying those recorded groups were not still really making an impact. And here Mel is writing some of the most prolific and prophetic things that he had ever written, or that anybody had written to that point. Maybe even to this point. Now, on the movie, there's a verse that's different from the recording. And I'll try to put the movie part in the video. But one of my favorite verses, he said, "A newspaper burns in the sand, and the headlines say, man destroys man. Extra, extra, read all the bad news on the war of peace that everybody will lose." Mel said, "A fight for power, a nuclear shower of people shot down in the darkest hour. Sights unseen, voices unheard, and finally the bomb gets the last word. Christians killed Muslims, and Germans killed Jews. Everybody's body's been used and abused. Minds are poisoned, souls are polluted. Superiority complex is deep-rooted. Leeches and lices, and people got prices. Egomaniacs control the self-righteous. Nothing is sacred, and nothing is pure, so the revelation of death is our cure." Now, on the movie, at that point, he has a different set of words. He starts talking about Iwo Jima and some other things. Not only is the rhyming, like the fact that he's technically rhyming the words good and making a good rhyme, because that's only one part of writing a rhyme, making sure that everything rhymes. But does it make sense? And then on top of that, is it clever? And then on top of that, is it historically accurate in this case? I mean, Mel, you know, Mel was a monster. Mel was fiery on that mic device at this time. Now, again, for context, for those of us who are old enough to remember, we were on the constant threat of nuclear war during the time of Reagan. So that's what he's talking about when he talks about the bomb getting the last word and a newspaper burning in the sand and the headlines say man destroys man. So along this time period, Mel was writing some very dark stuff along those lines. very dark, and he did a full-length album with his new lineup of the Furious Five, and one of the gems on the album was a song called World War III.
Realistically, the bombs are ready. Technically, nuclear by name. Capability, a total destructive, radioactive, death in flame. There was talk of a fiery doom, prophesied since the dawn of time in the world of bloodshed. Mass confusion, killer diseases, pollution and crime. Man is in conflict with nature, and that is why there's so much sin. But Mother Nature's delicate balance will fix it so nobody wins in 1984. See the world at war. Your darkest fears of reality are knocking down your door. Drones and mutations, clones and deviations. And there is no one that can escape the nuclear revelation. Because war is a game of business. And in the end, we fight. The new young and old are bought and sold. And everybody thinks they're right. World.
Okay, because of time constraints, I just, you know, I can't go through the greatness of that, but you know, you heard it. I do want to say this. In 1984, not many people inside or outside of hip-hop were talking about clones or drones. Both of those words are commonplace today. We're talking 84, which was 30-plus years ago. And he's saying clones and mutations, drones and deviations. Crazy rhymes, crazy rhyme pattern, crazy subject matter that came to pass. And Mel never says the word Illuminati or secret society or anything like that on this recording, but he does talk about an unseen hand and evil being behind closed doors, and he really, really dances around it. And again, this is a cat that's in his early 20s at this point and didn't have a precedent in hip-hop for saying things this heavy. So I think that really that says a lot. And also, I like to say as well, Beat Street Breakdown that I just talked about previously, World War III, there's no more Duke Booty involved in the writing process. This is just Mel writing solo. And I asked Mel once, you know, he's a humorous cat when he wants to be, a lot actually. And I asked him, I said, what was going on, you know, from 83 to 85, where you were writing these miraculous, prophetic, dark lyrics. And he said, cocaine. And, you know, I didn't know if he was joking or not. And, you know, he was half joking, he said. But whatever it was, he prophesized, clearly. For those who aren't familiar with those recordings and haven't heard them in their entirety, those who love lyricism, I definitely would encourage you to go to YouTube and look for Beat Street Breakdown, New York, New York, World War III. Just prophetic and incredible lyrics taking place on those recordings. Now, you would think from what I presented that Mel didn't have any braggadocious rhymes where he's just talking about where he could kill another MC lyrically, and he had a plethora of them. But his most prolific time was when he was doing the social commentary and the what I call prophesizing. So on to those. On the self-titled Grandmaster Melly Mel and the Furious Five LP, and that LP was called Work Party over in the UK for some reason. I never found out why that was. But anyway, on that LP, they had a song called The Truth. It was one of the better songs on that album. One of the problems with the record label that they were recording for, Sugar Hill Records, they didn't move into the present. By 84, a lot of groups like the Boogie Boys and definitely Run DMC and those Beat Machine based groups were using just drums and their voices. And that's what was so attractive about those recordings. I think LL probably came out in 84 with I Need a Beat. So all of that was going on. And Sugar Hill was still using their house band, a lot of guitars and, you know, bass guitars and keyboards. And as Russell Simmons would say, too much music. So that kind of hindered some of the recordings. But they did on a song called The Truth. They took it back to what they actually created, you know, in the parks years before, ironically. And they just rhymed over drums. In fact, they were the drums to a song by the Boogie Boys called Breakdancer. And Mel was always in diss/battle mode. Just listen.
Better Mel is potent, super high power to make the other MC feel devoured on all the MCs.
and I always will, cause I'm dressing for your funeral. Huh. Head's gonna roll and rappers gonna die, and whoever wanna battle, I'ma give them a try. Huh. It ain't no pressure, you know I'm fresher, cause I was born to never be lesser. It's more than a record in the show to be, because I came here to set the world free from around the way. Back in the days, we got beat so you could get paid. We made you a job, you stupid slob. Now you don't have to work, learn, steal, or rob. You got a little bit of fame and wealth, now you think you did it all by yourself. I am you, but you ain't me, because you didn't start rocking till 83. Mel and Mel is the best that will ever exist, and if I gotta be a sucker, suck on this.
Okay, so the only thing I got to say about that is, you know, you definitely heard some dissing in there. And, you know, that's what that is. So that's the truth. And Step Off, a big song for that group, Grandmaster Melly Mel, and his new version of the Furious Five featuring Cowboy and Scorpio, formerly Mr. Ness. Huge record in the UK, a top 10 charting record in the UK, and a pretty big record in the States as well.
Sitting on the corner just a waste of my time, and when I realized I was the king of the rhyme, I got on the microphone, and what do you see? Ha, the rest was my legacy. I was born to be the king of the bebop swing, to have stands in my dance, big diamond ring, to own a castle in a yacht, pool, million in gold, cause rap is a game that I control. I'm like Shakespeare, I'm a pioneer, because I made rap something people wanted to hear. See, before my reign, it was the same old same, until the bar with the bar, that street talk game.
Not only that, wow. So again, you know, Mel clearly had an issue with the new school, and that's no secret. I mean, shit, Mel got an issue with the new school today. Every school Mel had an issue with, but that's Mel, you know, that's Mel. So again, that was 1984. Now in 85, Mel, again, with the assistance of Cowboy and Scorpio, did a song called Pump Me Up. And it's basically a reworking of Trouble Funk's Pump Me Up, because Trouble Funk were their label mates at the time. So it was easy to get the instrumental track to actually do that, because Sugar Hill had the rights to everything during that time. So anyway, they redid Pump Me Up by Trouble Funk. And again, Mel's a shit talker on his song, and it's Pump Me Up.
rappers might be willing, but they ain't able, cause I was that king straight from my cradle. I screamed and hollered and shook my rattle and dreamt of defeating them all in battle. There was no food in my silver spoon, so I grew up hard and I grew up soon. I'm a righteous king, but I'm hungry too, and I eat up chumps that rap like you. Then I met this shark and his name was Jaws. He was biting my rhymes like y'all bite yours. I started writing my rhymes, the shark grew and grew, but I was writing more rhymes than the shark could chew. Ha, the shark got sick and then he exploded, cause he didn't realize that my rhymes was loaded. They flew in the air and into the sea, and the whole universe knew the king was me. Not a laser beam or a diamond mine or a platinum watch or some vintage wine. Not a pocket full of pearls, I'm an oil well. Like black gold, baby, I'm Melly Mel. And to all the fly girls, I come off hard. The slightest wink or nod makes me your guard. All my problems are small, so my pockets are large. And when they walk in the door, oh baby, I'm in charge. I treat ladies like jewels and diamond rings. On my fingers, on my arms, on everything. On the streets, on the sheets, I can't be beat. So don't ask where's the beef, baby, here's the meat. I'm gonna give you some soap, a towel and a cup. The bum MCs are all washed up. Put your women on the line with the rest of my crew, so I can make love to her and annihilate you, punk, punk. Me what?
Now, 85 was the last year that Sugar Hill Records was in existence, and that was pretty much it for the group for a long time. They got back together somewhere, you know, 4 or 5 years later in 89, and got on Elektra Records, reunited and put an effort together. Then later on, in 89, they went back to Sylvia Robinson, but not recording under Sugar Hill Records, recording under Bon Ami Records. And they put out an album called Piano, minus Flash. I think Kid Capri was the DJ on that album. And it was a good album for the time, but it was 89. We were in a whole different era. But one of the gems that stood out was a song called Gangster Movies. And Mel's rhyming over a chop of Take Me to Mardi Gras by Bob James. I think it's something that Mantronic had done. But anyway, he's rhyming over that, and he's rhyming about a plethora of things on gangster movies. But there's this one particular verse, and he's talking about why brothers in the street wear gold and kill each other over gold. And he's quoting the Bible in the verse, and it was a really dope verse. Yeah, clearly, in 89, Mel was past his zenith, in my opinion, you know, and probably in most people's opinion. I'm probably the biggest fan he has, but everybody has a window where they just operate far beyond, you know, what seems like even their capabilities. But to me, Mel just has brilliance, you know, the years between probably 82, 83 through 85. But then he had brilliance on the early end too with that Child Is Born verse. So, you know, also you could peep King of the Streets, which I don't really have time to get into, but you could peep that on your own. King of the Streets was another record probably around 84, 85 that he was just really killing it lyrically on that record. The last thing I like to say is this. I feel like just in rewinding this, you know, historically and saying this out loud, I feel like even more confident in the fact that he's the greatest. Just for me laying this out and reminding myself, you know, verbally out loud of what he's done. But I like to say this. The people who would like to argue that he doesn't deserve the title, the main thing they say is, yeah, he was good, but his discography is not long enough. Didn't make enough albums. Really never made real albums. The those albums on Sugar Hill Records were like compilations. They weren't full albums. You know, most of the songs had been done before, and they would add one or two songs and a bunch of R&B songs. Never did a full album. And to that, I would say, okay, first of all, Biggie's a contender for the greatest, and he only did two albums. And you know, I guess he did a posthumous album, but you know, really did two albums that people consider him the greatest based on, and they were saying he was the greatest after his first. So that's a bit of hypocrisy in a way. But what I would like to say with Mel, even if you're going to say that his discography isn't long enough or large enough, the brilliance in just what I laid out, there are plenty of other songs that the group had and that he had solo, but just in those songs, the brilliance in those to me is enough. Where any other shortcoming or perceived shortcoming should get thrown off the books. Because again, this man is the prototype. All of the greats say it. Even the ones who he's dissed, and Mel has probably dissed all of the biggest rappers, they still, after him dissing them, whether on record, in interviews, or whenever he's dissed him, they still bow down and, hey, look, Mel's the greatest. In fact, speaking of bow down, I've been around Mel and seen top-tier MCs meet him for the first time and literally bow down and get on a knee to him. I've seen it with my own eyes. So the greats bear witness that he's a great. So I think any perception of him not being a contender for greatest based on lack of material, it should be evened out by the greatness and potency of the material and the impact on the culture. Look, it's easy to say, well, if he didn't do it, somebody else would have done it. Somebody else would have said, you know, a child is born. Perhaps and perhaps not. Perhaps they would have said it, but without the same impact. All we know for sure is who did say it. And we know the impact. There would be no opportunity for Public Enemies or X-Clans or any MCs who talked about social issues if not for what Mel was writing when he was 16, 17 years old. Not in the way that it happened. It wouldn't have been an opportunity. Battle rhymes and braggadocio. Forefront of that. I've heard people say, well, he's not a good battle rapper. They're saying that based on when Kumo D and Busy B had their battle, the paradigm shifted. Mo D changed the whole thing up because he was doing what they call snapping, the personal attack. Before then, the forefathers of this, you know, the Kazes and Mo D himself, he said before this, people just said rhymes back and forth and the crowd cheered for whoever they liked the best based on their rhymes. Just rhymes. Rhymes about whatever. The braggadocious rhymes that we already always had. It was never a personal attack until Mo came in and shifted the paradigm of battling. So even what we see today in the battle arena, that's like a real big thing, the underground battle arena, that's something that Mo D is not even indirectly responsible for. But the paradigm has shifted. What battling was before, you say your rhyme, I say my rhyme, we'll see who the best swordsman is lyrically. You know, Mel comes from that. He's the prototype for the modern day MC. And, you know, some things are opinions, but the things that are recorded in the history that you can go back and check video footage, records, you know, whatever medium, that's the history. That can't be disputed. Okay, now look, I've gone like double the amount of time that I planned on going for this particular lesson, but I feel that everything that I said was pertinent. It had to be said. There's no way I could have edited this to make it any shorter and still have the potency that I wanted it to have. I think every verse, every recording is one in his body of work that proves that he is the greatest. One last thing. I would like to say this. Perhaps when we say greatest of all time, you know, really it's no greatest of all time. I heard Mel say on an interview, he said his these lists of the top 50 greatest MCs, he says it's BS because there aren't 50 great MCs. He says not even 50 great men in history. I thought that was interesting, and I knew where he was going with that. But when we say the greatest of all time, you know, if you're going to say all time and you're not familiar with the whole history of at least recorded rap, it's hard to say all time if you don't really know what came before you and your interest in the genre. So perhaps it would be better for the purpose, at least of these discussions that we have, not that they mean anything, it's just all, this is my top five, this is my greatest of all time. You know, we'll never get to a bottom of, you know, who is, and, you know, it's all opinion, basically. But perhaps we should break the greatest down to time periods. Maybe, you know, the this era. This is the best MC in this era. And this MC is the best from this era. It wouldn't make any difference. You still have the same arguments and the same madness surrounding it. But the greatest of all times, that's a hell of a claim. You know, it's cool to have the barbershop banter that we have back and forth about who's the greatest of all times. But again, you know, we got to have context when we speak those powerful words. This is your man, Jaquan, foundation lesson number 15. I hope you found it, if not educational, entertaining, enlightening. As always, feel free to leave a comment. The comments have been overwhelmingly positive. Much appreciated. I'm glad that so many people feel me and feel where I'm going and why I'm going there. You can check out my website for more information and interviews and more lessons at thefoundation.com, T-H-A, foundation.com. You can click on mobile site. There's a lot more information on the mobile site presently than there is on a desktop site. If you click on more options, there are tons of stories from all different genres, interviews. It's a plethora of good information there. You can hit me up on email, jaquan@thefoundation.com. All social media at jaquan, J-A-Y-Q-U-A-N-V-A. Respect.
Well, I'm not only the best rapper in the world, I'm the best rapper in the universe. Now, in other words, if UFOs came from outer space, and if any of them UFOs could rhyme, Melly Mel would crush them. Because I'm the best rapper, and why? Because I spend the most time trying to rap. It don't mean nothing about whether I make money or not. I'm in it for the art form. I'm not only a rapper, I'm a poet, and I'm a philosopher, because I study my trade to the utmost. And not only my trade, I study life, and I study people to the utmost. And that's what makes not a good rapper, but the greatest rapper, which is only something that I can only be. See, they want to be. I am. I'm one of the first original rappers that ever said a rhyme. I'm a legend in my own time. And it's not something that I'm saying out of ego. It's the truth. I'm a legend. When you see Melly Mel, it's like seeing Chuck Berry when you see Melly Mel. It's like seeing Willie Nelson when you see Melly Mel. Because that's how long ago I've been rapping. I've been rapping. I'm going on my 13th year of rap. No rapper could say truthfully that they have rapped that long. And I'm not saying just rapping, standing around but being known. I've been known out in the streets of New York. There's nowhere that I can go in New York or maybe the world that somebody would know Melly Mel. Anywhere in New York, I know everybody. I know businessmen. I know wives. I know school kids. I know pimps. I know hustlers. I know prostitutes. I know everybody. Everybody knows Melly Mel because I've been around that long.
A child is born with no state of mind, blind to the ways of mankind. God is smiling on you, but he's frowning too, because only God knows what you'll go through. You'll grow in the ghetto, living second rate, and your eyes will sing a song of deep hate. The places you play and where you stay looks like one great big alleyway. You'll admire all the number book takers, thugs, pimps, and pushers, and the big money makers, driving big cars, spending 20s and 10s, and you want to grow up to be just like them. Smuggling, scramblers, burglars, gamblers, pickpocket peddlers, even panhandlers. You say I'm cool, I'm no fool, but then you wind up dropping out of high school. Now you're unemployed, all non-void, walking around like your pretty boy Floyd. Turned stick up kid, but look what you done did. Got sent up for an 8-year bid. Now your manhood is took and you're a Maytag. Spend the next 2 years as an undercover fag, being used and abused to serve like hell, till one day you was found hung dead in a cell. It was plain to see that your life was lost. You was cold and your body swung back and forth. But now your eyes sing the sad, sad song of how you live so fast and die so young. So don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.